learn for a few minutes. So let's go do, we'll do a little chazor then from the Malbim, start with Pasuk Ches. Pasuk Ches of the three shepherds. V'achid, I'm going to put an end to the three shepherds. Who are the three shepherds? We had so many perushim. The Malbim says, Pasuk Ches, V'achid eshlosh ha-royim, b'yerech echot, limdu zalt, on page 819. If you have the article edition, page 819, Limdu Chazal ze Rabbeinu the Antoninus the Carbon the Carbon Melech Poras.
This, where is this?
Page 819 in the art scroll on page 819.
Yeah.
Perik Yud Aleph.
Said my Mori Chazal, but that's not.
No. I'm sorry. Malbim. The Malbim. We did not do the Malbim. The Malbim. Malbim Pasik Ches. Who are the three shepherds? On the Malbim, okay.
And that's on 8:18.
The Malbim begins at 8:19. Oh, you're right. On 8:18, it goes, oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm all mixed up. Where am I reading over here? One sec. Let me put it back in perspective. I'm mixed up here. Okay, I'm sorry. I was reading the Chidah. I'm sorry. You're right. Okay. Good catch. Okay. Page 818. The Malbim.
The best. We are.
You're on the ball. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay. So again, we're starting. Welcome, Heshi. Welcome, Alan. We're just going to spend a few minutes learning a little Navi to warm up, and then we'll spend some time learning about Shvi Shel Pesach. So we're continuing in this very difficult pasuk in Sefer Zechariah, Perik Yud Aleph, Pasuk Ches. Let me put everyone here on mute. The Chidah is on page 819. Okay, we'll do that eventually. Let's just see quickly. Pasuk Ches, V'achid eshleishes haroim b'yerach echad. Hashem says, I'll put an end to three shepherds. I will deny them their functionality. In 1 month, we learned, Baruch Hashem, so many perushim already as to who these three shepherds are. And let's see what the Malbim says. Rotza b'zeh ki kol zman shehoyu tachas yad malchei poras, hoyu lechem menucha. As long as the Jewish people were under the authority of the Persians, they had peace. That's an interesting thing to think, say, because is that really true? The tsar of Mordechai, of Haman, and the miracle of Mordechai took place during the Malchus, the empire of Paras. I guess it means after the miracle happened, Klal Yisrael had peace during their empire. Hoyla menucha ki malchei paras hoy malchei chesed. Okay, fascinating. The malchei paras, they were kind. Isn't that what the Gedolei Yisrael of Moshe said about America? It's a malchus shel chesed. And here the Malbim is describing the Persian empire, I'm assuming after the miracle, the poor miracle. Avol pisaim, suddenly, Nichrus Malchus Paras Laidei Alexander Hamokdoni, Alexander the Great. Suddenly the Malchus of Paras came to a sudden end with the rise of Alexander the Great. Ushloisha Malachim Omdu, three kings Lefaras, Sha'asu Toivos Im Yisrael. There were three kings that were good for Klal Yisrael. There were three kings that were good among the Persians. That were good for Klal Yisrael. Now, who are the good three kings? Number one was Koresh. Okay, Koresh was that was before the poor miracle. That was in the very beginning. V'artach Shasta, V'dor Yovesh. Now Artach Shasta was his son. I think that was the son that was the king that followed Koresh. He was also good to Klal Yisrael. And then V'dor Yovesh, likewise, that was the grandson. Daryovesh HaParsi, not to confuse Daryovesh.
Darius the second.
Not the Parsi. Hamodi, no, right. Daryovesh, we always confuse this. Daryovesh HaParsi, Daryovesh HaModi. Now, let's clarify. When we say Paras, over here the Malbim means Paras / Modai. These were two different nations that had an alliance, and they were married. the daughter, they were, I don't know the yichus, but they were connected through marriage. And in fact, the arrangement was that after the king of Paras would rule, then the king of Madai would rule, and after Madai it would go back to Paras. It would alternate between these two kingdoms. And it never happened. After Koresh died, it went to Madai, and power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. It refused to give back the Malchus to Paras. However, Chazal still considered them to be one unit. Daryavesh here refers to Daryavesh HaModi, not to be confused with Daryavesh HaParsi. Daryavesh HaParsi was the son of Esther. Okay, that was supposedly the son of Esther. That's called possibly that he was named. We went and had a discussion. Why did they have the same name? And we had a whole discussion because it was a way of Achashverosh trying to maintain his position at Chatzi HaMalchus Tinasin Lach. Even after the poor miracle, Achashverosh still, he remembered Vashti. What was it about Vashti that he remembered? That Vashti was a carryover of the empire that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And to a degree, Achashverosh always wanted to maintain that position, that the Beis HaMikdash should not be rebuilt. And that's why he said to Esther over and over, at Chatzi HaMalchus Tinasin Lach, which Chazal understand to mean, I'll give you everything except for a davar that's Chotzeitz the Malchus, to allow the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. Haman and Achashverosh get along very well, because it was Haman's 10 sons that succeeded in putting an end, in canceling the permission for Klal Yisrael to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash that was given to them by Koresh. So all of this really came to an end. The ability to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash did not restart until the time of after Achashverosh's death with Daryavesh, his son Daryavesh HaParsi. Achashverosh was trying to mold his child in the image of Daryavesh HaModi, who was loyal to his father, that canceled the permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. I don't remember the details, but it goes along those numbers. Over here, let's just see what he says over here. We have your three kings of Paras that were good to the Jewish people. Who were they? Koresh? Yeah. Yeah.
The problem I'm having here is that as I search, I can't find any Persian king named Karban.
Persian king called Karban?
Karban Melk Paras.
Where are you reading from? You're reading from the Chidah.
Yeah.
I'm reading the Malbim.
Okay.
We didn't get to the Chidah yet. Let's first focus on the Malbim. You're asking a good question. Who's he referring to? Okay, we didn't get a comment. Let's first focus just a little bit on the Malbim. The Malbim says that during the time of the Persian Empire, during the time of Paras, until the time of Purim, there were three good kings to Klal Yisrael. Who were they? They were, let's read again what he says over here. It's the second line. Ki Malchei Paras hoi Malchei Chesed. Avol Pisam Nichras Malchus Paras Alide Alexander Hamogdani. Originally, there were three kings in the empire of Paras. Koresh was the one who gave permission to Klal Yisrael to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The Psukim tell us that not only did he give permission, he allowed them to take back some of the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. He gave them some of them to return to Eretz Yisrael. In addition, he gave them a stipend. He gave them a donation to help them get the Beis HaMikdash, get it going. Then came his son, Artachshasta. And then we have Vidur Yavesh, Shenosnu Rishu Sheyeshuvu B'nei Agoyle, V'sheyivnu Habayis, V'choymos Yerushalayim. Now, when it says over here the word Daryavesh, I'm not sure, I do not know if he's referring to Daryavesh HaModi or Daryavesh HaParsi. And he's referring over here to the Empire of Paras. But the Empire of Paras,
It would seem to have to be the second,
right,
Daryavesh,
because this is Parsi.
Because he was good,
right,
to to the
Jews. He means that he gave them permission. Let's assume that to be the case. So he's saying
Parsi. The Artapshasta, there's several by that name, so it's hard to pin that down.
So that was, I think also that was a title, that term is a, like Paro. The same way the term Paro is the catch-all name for whoever occupied the office as the leader of Egypt, the term Artachshasta was a title that was given to any individual who led the nation of Paras.
Yeah, now, there were
not many of them.
Some named Xerxes and others named Artaxerxes.
Okay, they were different. I don't know the history, but he was. It seems that he was a major player who came after Koresh and permitted the Beis Hamikdash to be rebuilt. Then came at some point Daryovesh Hamodi, and Daryovesh Hamodi listened to the Aseres B'nei Haman, and he canceled them from rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. Then the Purim story came about. Achashverosh ceased to some, the Malchus of Modai came to an end. Well, that was really, there was some internal things going on in Paras and Modai. Again, they were connected. There was an arrangement between them that they would alternate. But at some point in time, Achashverosh took power and he continued this policy of refusing to let the Beis HaMikdash be rebuilt, and he made it clear to Esther he would not allow this to happen. And his own son, Daryovesh, it is interesting that he gave him the same name as Daryovesh HaModi, his predecessor, who was instrumental in canceling, his legacy was the cancellation of the rebuilding of the Bayis, of the Bayis Sheni. But he was not faithful to his father. He was faithful to his mother, Esther. And he did give permission for Klal Yisrael to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So according to the Malbim, when it says here, I'm going to put an end to these three shepherds in 1 month, the three shepherds are the three good kings of the Malchus of Paras. They did not all live at the same time. They did not live in the same, the empire spanned many, many years. They did not live, but these are the three that were mated, did chesed with Klal Yisrael, and according to the Malbim, it is these three that will suddenly come to an end with the rise of the nation of Yavan, and with their leader of Alexander the Great, and he will change the equation. Shenosnu rishus sheyashuvu b'nei agoyle v'sheyivnu habayis v'choymas Yerushalayim, Kaniska be'ezra v'nechayim. Notice there's a very big emphasis always on the walls of Yerushalayim. This is something we don't pay much attention to. But we once upon a time learned to say for Ezra and Nehemiah, forgot everything we learned. But there's a very strong emphasis on the wall of Yerushalayim. In the modern world, a wall means almost nothing. Unless you live in America and you live near Mexico. But a wall in the modern world doesn't mean very much because with technology, what's a wall? You go right over the wall. But in the time of Chazal, time of the Torah, a wall meant everything. Having a walled city meant independence, meant security. It meant you were a player. It's like, you know, think about today, a nation that has nuclear missiles, bombs. They are someone that you negotiate with. They are someone you pay attention to. If you're not a nuclear power, you're nobody. You're just a club. In order to have a place at the table with the League of Nations, you have to be in a certain league. Having a wall around your city elevates you to a status where you have a seat at with all the nations of the world. When Ezra was lobbying, Ezra, Nehemiah, and this whole tekufa, the concept of having a wall plays a major, major part of the status of Klal Yisrael in the eyes of the world. Exactly the same in the modern world, having nuclear weapons gives a nation today an entirely different status that they can no longer be ignored. That's the whole thing with Iran. Will they be permitted to have their own nuclear weapons? Will they not be permitted to have their own nuclear weapons? Israel, they have. Everyone knows. It's not a secret anymore. I think Olmert, by mistake, he publicly declared that Israel has used to be a secret. Not no secret. Everyone knows the secret. But this is a very major issue, and the pasuk, the Malmul here says that Klal Yisrael was always very grateful to these three Persian kings. Not only did they give permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, but they gave permission to rebuild the walls. And this is a very important thing, because look at it today. Today, if you want to build a shul, beautiful shul in wherever you live, who cares? You want to go to Eretz Yisrael and you want to build a magnificent shul. Do whatever you want. Who cares? If the Beis HaMikdash was not located where it is, and Klal Yisrael would say, you know, we want to build today the Beis HaMikdash in Tel Aviv. We want to build a temple. Could you imagine, just think about this theoretically. If today Klal Yisrael, the state of Israel, the Haredim would say, we want to build a real Beis HaMikdash in Tel Aviv, and there would be no halacha that you have to bring korbanos specifically in Yerushalayim, kilei basim, el hamenuch, el hanachala, let's say theoretically it would be permitted, you decide wherever you want, you can build a Beis HaMikdash. Would the world care? It's very not likely they could really care less. What do they care? Do whatever you want. You want to go have a Beis HaMikdash, you want to go sacrifice some animals? So maybe the animal rights people, they'll get a little bit upset. Does the world really care? But if Israel today would not have a nuclear weapon, make believe, and they would now want to acquire the technology to have their own nuclear weapons, the world would go crazy. They would get up and scream, no, 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 you can't allow Israel to have nuclear weapons. It's a miracle, a gift, that they already acquired these weapons with the help of the French when in the 1950s, 1960s, in the very beginning. They right away got their act together, 1, 2, 3, didn't ask any questions, got it done, finished. But could you imagine today if they did not have and they would want? The world would go crazy. The world would never allow it. But if we would want today to build the Beis HaMikdash and a piece of land that's not contested, they couldn't care less. But to us, to the religious Orthodox Jew, between these two, which one really matters? Which one really is important? The Beis HaMikdash? The nuclear weapons? Who cares? What's that going to do for us? So for an Orthodox Jew, what really counts is the return of Hashem's divine presence, a Beis HaMikdash. The nuclear weapons, that's not a concern. But in the eyes of the world, what counts? The nuclear weapons. That's what counts. The Beis HaMikdash, they couldn't care less about. Here, it's very interesting that in Sefer Nechemiah, when Klal Yisrael are described as returning, they're living in Bavel, and now they're coming back, and Hashem is showing them divine favor to allow them to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem is giving them two things. It's over and over. You're going back, number one, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And number two, you're going back to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. Ezra is focused on the Beis HaMikdash. Ezra was a Kohen. In fact, he could have been or should have been the Kohen Gadol. And Nehemiah is obsessed with the walls of Yerushalayim. What's this all about? Why is there the double focus, the Beis HaMikdash and the walls of Yerushalayim? The answer is, the Beis HaMikdash is to restore our personal self-esteem. The walls of Yerushalayim is to restore the respect of Klal Yisrael in the eyes of the nations of the world. They're two very different concepts. The walls of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. Koiresh, Artach Shasta, and Daryavish HaParsi gave permission for both. They're celebrities. They're celebrities for Klal Yisrael because they allowed us to restore our self-esteem, and they allowed us to restore, they restored our respect in the eyes of the world. Take that idea and look at, there was someone who recently wrote a book, The Presidents and the Jews. Does anyone remember who wrote this book? It was 2-3 years ago, maybe a little bit more. Someone very famous, he wrote this book about the presidents and the Jews. And they analyzed the relationship between the presidents of the United States from the very beginning and the Jewish people. And when you study the presidents, these people of power, you have to look at both of these issues. There were times when the Jews wanted something very important that would only be important to us. It would come at great expense. We would have to remove our enemies from within. Some Arab nations but the result of what we would achieve would not give us any greater standing in the world. And they were politicians. They were, you know, people who represented Eretz Yisrael, and they put pressure upon the United States to permit or to assist in allowing us to achieve success in matters that only would give us success and happiness. But as far as the world is concerned, they really don't care. And then there are things where Eretz Yisrael demanded from the United States different things which would affect, which would give us respect relative in the eyes of the entire world. And they're very different. When you make a request and say to a president of the United States, you know, we're going to do something now. We're going to take a whole group of people, a whole neighborhood of Arabs, and we're going to relocate them. And they're going to be screaming like crazy. We want you to help us. We want you to defend us. We want you to say that we're not doing anything bad. It's our land. Just be quiet. Don't make trouble for us. And in fact, put out a good press release that we're not doing anything wrong. When that mission will be accomplished, what will the world, what benefit is there going to be? It's only going to be for us. It's not going to make a difference to the world. What difference does it make to them? So how did a president of the United States, a person in an enormous position of power, how did they relate to that? And then there are things where we want to acquire nuclear weapons. We want to annex, we want to expand our territory. We want to take control of strategic areas in the region that will give us the upper advantage against all of our enemies. That's not a religious matter. That is a matter which earns respect, fear, that you can't just ignore the state of Israel. The very, very different types of situations, different requests, and each president, so to speak, when they deal with these issues and they're dealing with a very, very different, very different dimensions. And when you learn Navi, nothing is new. The more things change, the more things stay the same. Ezra, Nehemiah, when they rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, they engaged in two major events, two major goals: to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. Today, we don't think about that. The walls of Yerushalayim, because the walls of Yerushalayim, what difference does it make? The old city, the new city, then this boundary, that boundary, this gate, that gate, what difference does it make? But in those days, it made all the difference. Okay, so these are the three things. I'm Pasuches. I'm now 1, 2, 4 lines in. V'hatava zushal shloshal roim, sheitivu imam, nichchada b'yerechechad b'mos daryave sha'acharayim. It all came to an end with the death of the Yevush Acharon, Shemiyos, Hiskaber, Malchus Yevon, Shosu, Royce, Lishol, Achamos, Alexander. And all came to the end when Alexander Haparsi, when he died, when the Malchus of Paris came to an end with the rise of Alexander the Great. Now, Alexander the Great himself, we mentioned many times, he himself did not cause very much harm to Klal Yisrael, but when Alexander the Great died and his Malchus was divided among his three different groups, that's when all of the tzaras began. The gamrit and the loymar, so that's what it means in one yerach, in one, in one. Now when it says yerach, he's not over here explaining what it means, he's not explaining here what it means a month. All we can say is last time we learned that yerach means in a short time. 30 days is a short term, just like Yaakov Avinu, he said to about Rachel, Vayiyu ve'inav kiyomim achodim be'ahavosoy oisa. It was a short period of time. So here also it means in a short period of time, the good old days came to an end. V'gam ritzen olem ha'mishosho b'shloish ha'royim ki melech podas hemid shloish ha'royim shahim yanig es kolam alchus shetachas yadoy. The king of Paras appointed three different shepherds that should guide the Malchus. Shenechlika l'sholosh medinas bavel modai uparas. Kaniske b'daniel siminvav shalze ro daniel Malchus paras. Shetelos il'in b'fuma bein shina. There were three, these are types of teeth, three different I don't remember, there were different types of teeth. These were three claws that came down amongst the teeth. And this is a very important historical note, according to the way Chazal understand history, and we have to see how this matches up with the secular record of history, that Persia, when Paras conquered Bavel, after the fall of Bavel, and Paras Umodai ascended, the Malchus of Paras was really divided into three regions. Bavel, whom they conquered, but their hometown, their territory, their own turf where they came from, and their partner, Modai. So following the 70 years after the end, Bavel existed for 70 years. Hashem Elanu V'chanetzar to rise, to succeed, to conquer, and to dominate the world for 70 years. After the fall of Bavel, Paras and Modai, they became the world superpower. But their Malchus was divided into three regions, three branches of their Malchus, one called Paras, one Modai, okay, they were partners, and then the nation whom they conquered and controlled, which had its own flavor, its own possibly independence, called Bavel. So he's learning that into the Pasuk. I will now bring an end to the Malchus that we like to call of Paras Umodai. Sometimes it's called Modai or Paras, and sometimes we call it Paras Umodai. But the Malbim is telling us both of those are not 100% correct. It's really Paras, Modai, Bavel. Or maybe you can switch the order in any way that you like, but it's really three. And this is how he views this era. This era was an era of three different branches of this Malchus. This will come to a swift end and be taken over by Alexander the Great. V'kulam balu b'yerech echad b'mos d'ayovish when d'ayovish died. V'oz and then, v'atiksar nafshi bohem ki hayavonim hechil l'chora l'yishol v'gam nafshim mochalabi ki rabu oz ha'paritzim sheyotsu min hados. At this time, Hashem says he was frustrated with Klal Yisrael, and that is why he allowed the Yavanim to overcome. And here it's very, very, very frightening when it says here, v'gam nafshim mochalabi, the neshamas of the Jewish people, they detested Hashem, because at this time many Jewish people, they abandoned their faith due to the tzoros of the Yavanim. All right, so this is enough for today. This is a very fascinating interpretation. Just to recap, just a little bit of a map. We've learned over here so many perushim as to who these three shepherds are. Let's review very quickly some of them. Right now, we just finished learning. It refers to either. We have two perushim in one in the Malbim. We got a double, a bonus, an afikomen present. Two interpretations as to who are the three shepherds. Either three kings of Paras, Koresh, Artach Shasta, and Daryovesh Shaparsi, the son of Esther, or the three branches of this Malchus. There were four Golios, Bavel, Paras Umadai, Yavon, Edom. In the Golos of Paras Umadai, according to the Malbum, there are really three parts. There is the branch, the new Bavel, that was under their authority. There is Paras and Modai. That's the three. If you remember when we learned the Mitzudot David, he taught us that the three referred to the three sons of Matisyahu. Their names were Shimon, Yohanan, and Yehuda. Yehuda, Yohanan, and Shimon, the three sons of Matisyahu. Those were the three main sons. They were during when they were leading Klal, and they led for a total of 30 years. Their malchus spanned 30 years, and that's why it says b'yerach echad. A yerach is a month, or 30 days. Each day represents a year, 30 years. We learned Rashi. Rashi refers all the way back to the past, three of the major kings of Klal Yisrael during the Bayis Rishon. Who were they? One was Achav, was a Rasha. There were three evil kings. Achav, and the second was Achazia, Melech Yehuda, and the last was Asalia. Okay, Asalia. So those are the three that we're referring to the three eras. Hashem is going to cut down these three, and according to this interpretation, it's very different according to Rashi, is according to Rashi, we are describing a very unpleasant and bad time in the history of the Jewish people. Hashem is saying, I'm going to bring an end to the wicked. What are the wicked? The wicked era of Achav, the wicked era of Achazia, and the wicked era of Asalia. Enough of this. Get rid of the garbage. That's what Hashem said. Hashem said, we put an end to the bad. According to all the other Mepharshim, everyone besides Rashi, they totally disagree, and they learn that we're referring to good times. The good times are going to come to an end. Rashi says, don't worry. The bad times are going to come to an end. I'm going to get you, I'm going to correct your mistakes. I'm going to get you back on the right path. Remember, we learned according to the Radak. The Radak had a whole different interpretation. He learned these refer to the last three good kings. Good kings, I don't know if that's still good, but the last three kings of the Malchus of Yehuda who followed after the death of Yoshiyahu. We read all about Yoshiyahu and when. We read about him in the Haftorah of the second day of Pesach. Everyone was paying attention. The last pasuk talks about Yoshiyahu. He cleaned out the whole Eretz Yisrael of Avodah Zarah, and they offered a Korban Pesach. And the pasuk there concludes, there was no one like him. There was never a king before. V'lekom kamohu, no one will ever be as good as him. Yoshiyahu gets the highest score for being the best king in Klal Yisrael. And the pasuk, when it says here, the three kings will be cut down, it refers to his three successors, Yehoiachaz, Yehoiakim, and Tzidkiyahu. They will be cut down, and that will be the end of the Bayis Rishon. And then he quoted another interpretation. I believe he said the Radak quoted another interpretation. Maybe not, I don't remember anymore. Maybe not. But know which one was the best? The best of them all was the Targum, who didn't say anything. He was silent. Silence is golden. He didn't want to give any interpretation. The Radak made that point that for some mysterious reason, the Targum refuses to identify who Zechariah is referring to with this term, the Shalishes HaRoyim. There are probably more that we discuss. I don't remember this moment in time, but it's quite a pasuk. How often do you learn a pasuk where you have on the same exact page enormous diversity? enormous. You know, you have a pasuk. All right, so the perush is a little like this, a little like that. You twist and turn, but the basic theme of the pasuk is usually the same. Each one of the farshim has a slightly different angle. But how often do you have a pasuk where you have such extreme differences describing who are we referring to? We went through something like now 5 different perushim, and there are even more. There are even more, which either I forgot them already since we learned last time, but there are more yet to come. Okay, we'll stop over here. And let's just talk a little bit about Shvi'i.